I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. Australia has issued an official apology for historic wrongs against the nation's indigenous people, the Aborigines and the Torres Strait Islanders. Prime Minister Kevin Rudd addressed Parliament on Wednesday.
Today we honour the indigenous peoples of this land. We reflect on their past mistreatment. We apologise for the laws and policies of successive parliaments and governments that have inflicted profound grief, suffering and loss on these, our fellow Australians.
The Prime Minister said the government was especially sorry for the treatment of what are called the stolen generations. For more than 60 years, Australian children were taken away from their parents and placed in state orphanages or sent to be raised by white families. The struggle of Australia's Aborigines for compensation, land control, and civil rights stretches back to at least the 1930s. But what will happen as a result of this apology? Will people's lives change? Joining me now is Kirsty Parker. She's the managing editor of the Koori Mail, a newspaper that covers Australia's national indigenous issues. She's based in Lismore, about 10 hours north of Sydney. Welcome.
Hello, Farai.
So it's great to have you on. And before we talk about the apology, I want to know a little bit more about you. Tell me about your parents and your connection to Indigenous Australia.
Sure. I identify as an Aboriginal woman from Australia. I'm a Yuwalari woman, which is essentially my mother's language group, which comes from northern New South Wales. My dad is an interloper from England. He's a POM. So I have mixed heritage. I identify, though, as an Aboriginal woman because that's the experience that I've known. I was born and raised in Australia.
For someone who was in the U.S. and doesn't know very much about Indigenous issues in Australia, where do you see a parallel with the U.S. Black experience or the U.S. Native American experience?
From my understanding of the Native American experience, I guess that would be the closest parallel that I'm aware of. I understand that there is in the US a reformatory or dormitory generation where First Nation Americans were removed from their families. And that's essentially the a pretty apt description of Australia's stolen generations, which are basically Aboriginal, mostly Aboriginal, but some Torres Strait Islander people that were removed from their families as children, essentially from probably, you know, the early 1900s right through until about 1970 under government policies and laws. And it was certainly governments that enabled Aboriginal children to be removed from their families. In most cases, it was part Aboriginal children or children who had mixed heritage. And these children were essentially removed because there was a prevailing belief that because they had some non-Aboriginal heritage, that they perhaps could be effectively salvaged, that they might be able to be educated and to become so-called worthy, you know, members of Australia's society.
There's also a question of language where on some of the things that you've written, you talk about black and white Australians. And when you say black, you mean Aboriginal or Indigenous, correct?
Yes, I mean Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
Yeah. How does the language, I mean, in the U.S. we use one language of race, and black usually means, you know, a descendant of enslaved Africans. It's come to mean, you know, a somewhat broader array of things like that. But why is the word black, is it a choice? Is it what was imposed? Is it both?
In many cases, people were described as black or black fellows in the early, you know, by early settlers because people were dark-skinned. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Australians do, for most part, I believe, identify as black Australians. But I guess it's more here in Australia, some people are reluctant to leave it at black because they say it's not just about our skin colour, it's also about our First Nation status. I guess we shorthand it to say that we are black Australians, but people generally prefer to be known by their language group. I mentioned earlier that I'm from the Yuwalari people of northern New South Wales. There were, you know, in excess of 350 different language groups before white people came to Australia, and more people are identifying with their particular language group.
There have been so many moments in American history where there have been challenges or conflicts or absolute heart-rending moments where a black person in America could not be fully vested in citizenship, sometimes not vested at all. Do you feel Australian?
That's a really interesting question because it has come up certainly in the context of this national apology. I personally feel, and a number of people that I have spoken to, Aboriginal people, have said to me before this day, and we're talking about the day of the national apology, I never felt Australian in the sense of the, I guess, the modern Australian kind of identity. I've always felt like an Aboriginal person from this country. I've identified with my traditional country, but not in a sense that I'm an Australian, because Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people suffer serious levels of disadvantage in all sorts of social indicators, health, housing, education, employment, etc. And it's those sorts of things that I guess make people feel as if they are included in Australian society. This apology, you know, has obviously generated a lot of debate about whether, as a symbolic measure, as a gesture, it will achieve any real practical outcomes for Aboriginal people. And there's been a broader discussion about whether, you know, we should concentrate on the symbolic or the practical. Aboriginal people don't see why they should have to choose.
If you had to choose something, even something small, that this struggle has given the world in terms of knowledge about how to resolve differences or knowledges about how to negotiate these constraints that people have put on each other in this growth of human society, what has your experience as an Australian, the experience that led up to this apology, offered to other people who are looking around at the struggles over Indigenous rights and race and ethnicity in their own countries?
I would just have to say, I mean, it's been a real eye-opener for me as an Aboriginal person. Aboriginal people have grown to be extremely cynical about the words of government, about promises that are made. The fact that there has been this consultation, and it was an unprecedented level of consultation with members of the Stolen Generation, people who were literally removed, were asked, what would it personally mean to you if we apologised? The government was at pains to say, we ask the people that this apology matters to most. I mean, the words that the Prime Minister that you played were part of it. He also apologised very specifically for the removal of Aboriginal kids, for breaking up families, for the indignity and degradation inflicted on a proud people. That acknowledgement is just absolutely massively powerful for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. It says, you acknowledge our experiences where previously, you know, I know older members of our community who are in their 60s and 70s have said to me, I have been through my entire life looking into the eyes of white Australians and I know that they think I'm a liar. Now to have people being validated after, you know, 6 or 7 decades of that kind of denial is exceptionally powerful.
On that note, Kirsty, thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
Kirsty Parker is the managing editor of the Koori Mail, a newspaper that covers Australia's national Indigenous issues, and she joined me from Lismore in New South Wales, Australia.